And welcome to Christ Today. Thank you very much. This is Mike Dalis.
And John Stephenson.
And today we have retired Marine, ex-businessman, board of directors. We have Mr. Kevin Bonner, who wears many hats and has a lot going for him as far as activities. And he is also a Christian. Welcome, Kevin. Thank you for being on our show.
Appreciate it.
And one of the things that we want to go ahead and do is, Kevin, we want to go ahead and have you introduce yourself, the different hats that you've worn throughout the years, and also we want you to speak a little bit to your Christian faith, how your Christian faith has worked for you and helped come up, you know, as it were, built you up to the challenges that you've had throughout your career.
Okay. Started a long time ago. Really, when I decided to enlist in the Marine Corps, it was in the early 80s, and a lot of turmoil going on in the country and the world then as well as today, and feeling as if I needed to do something. I turned myself over to God's hands and decided to enlist in the Marine Corps, and let him lead me through that 20 years, eventually, of my life. And then certainly after I retired and was exposed to the civilian world again and having to adjust to the norms of the civilian world, I certainly relied on the Bible's teaching and the example of Jesus to help me through a lot of those transitions as well.
Would you say that the military world was any easier or any harder to go ahead and navigate through as a Christian?
As a Christian, it was probably, I think as a Christian in the military, it's probably less turbulent in the sense that you have, even though there are people of different denominations, there are lots of Christians in the military. And I think everybody, no matter the denomination or the religion, but certainly everybody when they're in the military, I think, has a desire to do something well for their country. And through their religion's faith and practices, they transcribe that into their daily activities. And certainly I did that with mine. And in the military, since everybody's pretty much working towards the same goal, there's not a lot of agitation in what our purpose and mission is. In the civilian world, it's less less coordinated, I'd say. And so you have a lot more turbulence. And in that turbulence, through the stories of the Old Testament, it's easy to understand, I think, that the turbulences that we do feel today aren't anything new, and that there are lessons that we can learn from the ancients on how to deal with the trials and tribulations that we think are new and earth-shattering, when in fact much worse has come before us. And it's our strength in the times that we see like we do today that will allow and provide for our future generations to fulfill the destiny that I think we would all like to see in our righteous world.
Now, Paul has asked us as Christians to compare ourselves with good soldiers. How has the discipline of the military helped you in the civilian world?
It's interesting that you bring that up because I have a really interesting experience with that, in the sense that when I joined the military, and I first stepped onto Marine Corps Recruit Depot in San Diego, it was really early in the day, unlike most of the folks that show up late at night and pretty much get inundated with the welcome aboard from the Marine Corps drill instructors. But since I got there early, I was able to see the preparation for that arrival. And so I went from, you know, unkempt, but certainly, you know, a 20-year-old civilian just out of college, of stopping anyway and enlisting, but and then transforming and watching myself transform into that Marine, that well-polished Marine at the end. And then during the graduation ceremony, we get to have our families show up. And as we're preparing to have the ceremony in the base theater, since I was one of the honor graduates, I was handing out flyers for the families as they were coming in. And while the families were waiting outside the big glass doors, not really seeing what I was seeing from them and their activities, it was amazing for me to see notice the difference in how, during the last 3 months of my life, walking up or marching up to the theater, which every Sunday became the chapel, in formation, like Marines do, and then now I'm watching outside in the chaos of the civilian community, and there's no order or coordination or cooperation, and clothes, just wearing any old clothes they want. And so I realized that I had changed. And in a way, that's the way it is when you're a Christian, is that you go through a series of transitions, of growth, of development, and there comes a point when you see yourself different. You're not like the people on the other side of the glass, so to speak. And that's when you realize that you have a responsibility to maintain that sort of code of conduct, so to speak. And that's kind of the way I look at it.
Okay. Now, describe, in the Marines, what were your jobs?
I was originally an air traffic controller, and I had one of those mornings you would see in the movies where you show up to work one day and you're told they have a special operation for you if you want to get involved. And I became involved with unmanned air vehicles really early in my career, and kind of worked my way through that and helping develop the Marine Corps' unmanned air vehicle program by the time I retired in 2002.
Now, we all know that doors are open. Some doors are opened by God, and some doors open that lead rather than to God's destination, to confusion and distraction. Do you think that the doors that had opened to you in the Marines, do you think that they were a part of your ultimate divine destiny?
Well, I look at it, I go with the keep it simple, stupid principle. And, you know, we could get into the Bible studies of specific verses in the Bible. But if you also look at just the general flow of what the Bible is trying to portray to you, and Jesus' example on how to execute the principles of the Bible, you notice that, I notice that it really doesn't matter to me which door is open. It's open for a purpose, and your purpose, whether it's to be surrounded in luxury or surrounded in, you know, despair, your purpose is to be the shining light, so to speak, for those around you, because they need your strength. That's what you're there for. That's the way I look at it.
And how many people that you were surrounded by, both in air traffic control and in the unmanned aerial systems, how many were like-minded in Christ?
I think quite a few majority of people that join the military have a religious affinity. Christians, I mean, it's very important part of the foundation of our country, the Christian faith, and how our Constitution was developed to structure our government, the purposes, the reasons why our founders declared their independence are all based on a Christian faith. And although that the military is trying to downplay, our government is trying to downplay the role of the Christian faith in the development of our country, that's where I think we as Christians can't hide or can't ignore those opinions and not speak out against that and remind people just exactly why our country was founded, who founded it, and the principles upon which they codified their ideals.
Okay. Now, the Marine Corps Aviation Association recently dubbed you Wildcard 01. What is that about?
Well, it wasn't the Marine Corps Aviation Association. That is a group of Marine aviators that I am a member of, the purpose of which is to provide, among other things, to provide education scholarships for Marines and their Marine families, especially those who have whose fathers or mothers have been killed. That's something that I'm pretty proud of. The Wildcard 01 moniker comes from when my last duty station at Marine Corps or Marine Aviation Weapons and Tactics Squadron 1 at Marine Corps Air Station Yuma, which I was the first enlisted UAV, unmanned air vehicle, department head. And so the UAVs, when they fly in these aviation live fire exercises, all the aircraft have monikers, call signs for unmanned air vehicles. It's Wild Card. So when you as an instructor are assigned to the squadron to plan and execute these live aviation exercises, they give you a moniker depending on what number instructor you were in line. And since I was the first one, Wildcard 01 is the one that I ended up with.
So 01 has been retired. Nobody else gets it.
Correct.
Okay. And the reason that I wanted to go ahead and bring this up about you being the very first of a long series of instructors to introduce the unmanned aerial system to a military role, one of the reasons I wanted to bring this up is to have you encourage our listening audience that, you know, you may be called to break new ground. You may be called to do something that nobody else has ever done before. Explain a little bit how your Christian faith allowed you to lean on God's strength to get you through over the bumps in the road.
Well, the thing to keep in mind is it's important to have a moral and ethical base, you know, from a secular standpoint, and a religious base, and then how you execute your religion. And certainly mine is in a Christian way, because I was, you know, born Baptist and baptized, and grandfather was a minister, and other grandfather deacon. So I was raised in the church, and so I've always had, you know, that inside. But when you do perform, I think, in a community service way, and when you are asked, no matter whether it's the first time ever or just the first time for you, sometimes it's difficult to know if you're doing the right thing or not. And because, you know, you want to be happy and you want to do well at your job and you want to have your, you know, superiors you know, appreciate what you're doing, so you want to do the best you can. The principles upon which we learn as Christians, I think, can, you know, certainly lead you through, you know, a furnace, fires, you know, and even in just daily, your daily work with other people, and being able to guide and counsel them as they seek their own counsel as they deal with incidences in their own lives. And so relying on those commandments and those principles and those, and understanding the parables of Jesus and how they pertain to people's lives helps, I think, guide you through those difficult times of, I wouldn't say indecision, but you're just making sure that you're doing the right thing. And the point to all that is that's the measure, that's the seed from which your actions should sprout. And you shouldn't wonder, well, I'm a Christian, and I believe this way, but they really wouldn't appreciate it in this organization if I brought, you know, something up, so I'm just going to keep it to myself. And it's not that you have to constantly espouse, you know, Jesus everywhere you go, but it's the principles that you bring, the righteousness that you bring, the light that you bring to the environment that you can't hide. And you have to filter what's going through the ether of your environment through your Christian faith to be able to determine truth and falsehood, and then be able to create a more righteous environment, a more righteous purpose for whatever that you're pursuing. Because any technologies, especially as we go into a new industrial age in robotics and automation, can be used for both good and bad. And we as Christians should not shy away from participating in the advancement of these technologies. Rather, we should implore ourselves to become a part of it so that we can not impose, but we can certainly impact the purpose of the technologies for God's purpose, for a righteous cause.
Okay. Now, you were an ex-businessman for a little while?
Well, I was married to I was married to a lady who was an orthodontist, and I ran her office. I ran her office for a few years. So, yeah, we had to keep a business running for a while.
Okay, and then?
And she's still doing well, you know, so.
And so moving from there, you went on to an internship with the Marysville Gold Sox for a little while?
So, yeah, basically the way that kind of falls into play is when I retired and I was married and we were working in through the orthodontics. And I also have a daughter who is in the Army, and she, just right after I retired, is about the time that she started performing her train, where she eventually ended up spending a year in Ramadi, Iraq, as a civil affairs specialist working with women to develop business opportunities for them, because all the men were dead, so they had to come up with a way to make a living, and they didn't know how to organize themselves. So they had military women go over there and hold councils with these Iraqi women to figure out ways that they could barter and trade and make money so that they could take care of their kids. And, of course, they helped develop schools so that the kids would have a place to learn. And in the meantime, I also have a son who's mentally disabled who came to live with me and Nicole. And that's when I really began to understand a lot about really integrating with people who are not as capable as myself, and learning how to accept and appreciate how not only can I help another person less capable than I, but how that person can also teach and assist me through my life. And my son has been quite the instructor for me.
Okay.
For sure.
Listeners, and we are listening to Christ Today with Kevin Bonner being interviewed, and we will be right back after this short break.
Here at Sycamore Glen, we actually like to think of ourselves as a senior resort.
Every day is just like home. It is home. I love it here.
We encourage people to come down and visit us and to take a tour, to look around, to have lunch on us or dinner on us and experience Sycamore Glen. Not the lifestyle you need, but the lifestyle you've earned.
That's Sycamore Glen. For more information, call 894-0384.
Thank you, listeners. This section of the broadcast is being brought to you by Calvary Christian Fellowship in Oroville. And remind you that Pastor Hicks will be having service at 11 a.m. on Sundays, and Bible study at 9:45 a.m. Thank you. Welcome back, Kevin Bonner.
Kevin, we ended the last segment with you talking about your son,
right.
And you and I have had some conversations offline before, several about different folks being in different seasons of their life or different
right.
seasons spiritually. And you've also talked a little bit about production over time.
Correct.
Would you describe just a little bit about how people need to slow down and give each other a little space?
Well, thank you for allowing me the opportunity to bring this up, because I do think that it's something that helped me, and I think it's an idea, it's a concept that people can employ that would be helpful to them in their daily lives and certainly with their family. And I mentioned that I was married to an orthodontist, and I also mentioned that I had a special needs son. The orthodontist, Nicole, was not David's mom. So I'm feeling this turmoil inside, is how is this going to work? An orthodontist, a doctor, a professional, a technician, very busy, and my son, not so much, needs a lot of time to help develop him. Professional person, they need a lot of time and a lot of support as well to accomplish all the activities that they need done. And so I was looking to try to figure out a way I could balance these two things and keep myself sane. And what I became to realize was that we all have what I would term a production over time curve. And a production is basically a concept of what was developed, a manifestation sort of, an equivalent of a concept that was developed by studying combat air fights in the Korean War. And basically the concept is what's called an OODA loop, where you orient yourself to a situation, you observe what's going on, you decide what you need to do within that environment, and you act upon it. And that's a loop. That's called an OODA loop, O-O-D-A, OODA loop. And the faster you can do that, the more opportunistic you have, the better opportunity you have in the idea of a Korean War air campaign to overcome, to outmaneuver your enemy. Well, the OODA loop principle can be applied to everyday life, too, as you're walking down the street, just planning your day. How much can you do and how quickly can you do it to get through your day? Some people can do that very quickly, and some people not so much. And then there's the component of time. Some people can do a lot of things quickly over a very short amount of time, and others take a very long time to not do very much. But to them, they're doing a lot. And everybody has this normal curve over time of how much they can produce over time. And the production is a component of your workload, your situational awareness, and your performance. All those three of those things, all those of those elements can be measured. Once they're measured, you can put them over a time graph, and you can determine, you know, how you produce, what makes you comfortable, what's your mean level of production. Because you can max yourself out by staying too productive for too long, and then you get stressed. And you can also stress yourself out by not doing enough for too long. And so everybody has this ebb and flow, this up and down curve over time. And if you can, as your own self, be able to recognize what a person's natural production over time curve is, you can better harmonize with what they do during the day. And in the case with my Nicole, who is the orthodontist, as long as I was, you know, keeping up with her pace, we never had conflict. But that pace was a little faster for me, so I would start to slow down, which could lead to conflict. Likewise, with my son, I have to slow myself down to just be with him, doing less production over longer time, and there was no conflict. But if I made him speed up, which he couldn't do easily, then he would stress out. But if I stayed at his pace too long, then I would stress out. So it becomes this back and forth issue, and it can be managed by just actually recognizing that it's happening. And then you become better able to manage your time such that there's no pressure within the space that you're interacting with another human being, because you're in harmony with the pace that you're both progressing through that space of time.
Okay.
And
so
it's helped me be able to deal with my son, David, quite a bit, recognizing that as much as I would want him to keep up with what I need to do or what I would like to do during the day, he just can't. And it's an unrealistic expectation.
Okay.
And that I need to adjust things for myself to help him manage his day, that also in turn manages mine, but that still creates a harmonic flow through our day. And it's easier for people to speed up because there's more production in a faster, in more production over smaller time. There's more profit in that. There's more reward in producing more over less time than there is producing less over a longer time. So people have a tendency to be very eager to help those who have a high production over time curve, and they tend to ignore people that require more patience. And you see that in the special needs community quite a bit. And that's why people who may seem to be less supported, sometimes it's difficult for them to get their point across because, quite frankly, people just don't spend the time to listen and understand.
Okay, so let's go ahead and apply this, give a bit of a spiritual application. In Daniel chapter 12, verse 4, it says, "But thou, O Daniel, shut up the words and seal the book even to the time of the end. Many shall run to and fro, and knowledge shall increase." So we're told at the time of the end, knowledge is going to increase, and people are going to be running to and fro. Now, you're talking about, when we talk about this production over time curve, we're actually, aren't we actually talking about every aspect of people's lives today? Because we're being told to speed up, and we're being absolutely deluged with information, with expectations, with production needs, with changes. I mean, change is the watchword of the day, it seems like. It seems like no day goes by where we're not being introduced to some type of new technology or some type of new expectation as consumers, as producers, as whatever. That's a lot of stress on today's people. So how do we give ourselves space?
Well, I'll tell you, when I did the internship with the Gold Sox, one of the things that we did was one of the between inning games that we had was a race around the bases, where you got to race Mr. G around the bases, and it was a very cute thing to have small kids race around the bases on, and the crowd loved it. And it was really fun to do because the kids loved it and everything else. But once in a while, when a child would get out into like the second base area, now you're like in the middle of this expansive baseball field and you're only like 2 feet tall. And the crowd's just having a hoot. It could be kind of overwhelming for you. And so they freeze sometimes. And that's the way we are as people sometimes. With all this change, all this distraction, all this whirlwind of activity going around us, we freeze and we don't know what to do. We don't know where to go. Well, when I saw the little girl, you know, froze in the middle of the field, and certainly there's danger going on because they're actually having infield practice in between inning games while this run is going on, so I don't want her to get hit by a baseball. So I run out into the field, and I notice that she's, I wouldn't say scared so much, but she's confused, and she doesn't know what to do, and I could see it in her eyes. And I didn't want to just go up and grab her and run her off the field because I wanted her to have an enjoyable experience. So all I did was I kneeled down and just reached my arm out, reached my hand out, just so she can focus on my hand, sort of like God would do when you think the world is coming down upon you. And she saw it. She didn't see me. She saw my hand. She grabbed it. And we finished the race, and everybody had a great time. And that's the way it is, I think, in our lives. All these distractions, all these changes create this whirlwind of confusion around us. Some people can see it very well, the high production over time people. Some people not so well. And it's up to us to be able to help people manage through that confusion by reaching our hand out in this state of confusion and whirlwind and guide them to home plate.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit about this OODA loop. Correct me if I'm wrong. It's observe, orient, decide, and then act.
Correct.
Okay. So from a spiritual standpoint, a Christian, when they're going through their daily walk, they need to be observing what's around them. And they need to be observing not just from the physical set of eyes, but from the spiritual set of eyes. And then they need to use the scripture to orient themselves according to what is good, what is bad, what is possibly harmful, what is a possible opportunity. And then they need to make a decision, and then they need to act on that decision. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Uh-huh.
Okay. The OODA loop is observe, orient, decide, and act.
Correct.
Okay. So, from a spiritual standpoint, Christians should be observing their environment, both physically and spiritually. They should be orienting themselves according to the Word of God, the truth that they know. Then the decisions that they should make should be based upon that truth as to how to act, and then they should carry out whatever they and the Spirit of God decide is the best course of action. Part of
correct.
The decision.
And your commitment to that principle and to God's word is what makes that happen faster. If you're hesitant and, you know, if you're hesitant, then, you know, your production, you won't respond as quickly. You know, it won't be as confident. It won't be as assured. And it's not that you need to be, you know, it's not like you need to have to feel like there's a certain assertiveness that you have to have. It's just a way that you are. It's a theme that you have in your life that people can see. That this is the way that you think and will respond to things. And it's not something that's arbitrary. It's something that is ongoing.
Okay. Now, what we're doing as Christians, though, is we are doing things in a slightly different manner than those people who are flying combat missions in Korea, because we are loving our neighbor as ourselves.
Yeah, and but I'm not talking about, like, it has to be, you know, something about a combat. It's just the way that you perceive things. And when you're with another human being who's looking for answers or who may feel lost, having that confident stride down that narrow path is what people are looking for. And the acceptance that, Now, when you do that, you have there's a perception that you have from people that, you know, you think you might be better or that you have this better way. And, you know, it could become intimidating for some people. But, you know, Jesus never turned anybody away, and he was patient with people, and he welcomed people. God encourages that in our, you know, whole lives, too. That's why we should always be accepting of wherever we are, with whoever, with whomever we are with, whether they're rich or poor or famous or not. Our purpose there is to provide that shining light to that environment and to that person, to be that example of God's child.
Very good. And we simply need to reorient. Instead of being having an aggressive manner, we need to reorient to love.
Right. And, you know, I don't want to get into the, you know, I don't want to say that there's no room for standing your ground, you know, when you're being terrorized, assaulted, you know, confronted. And there might be people that would disagree with me on that. But certainly the way in which we walk through life should be through love and righteousness as an example, not only in what we say, but in what we do. And that comes from the display of patience, and that gets into the whole production over time and your willingness to go slow for people who need it. Just because they don't understand it doesn't mean that you understand a concept or are having trouble doesn't mean that, you know, you should ignore them. It doesn't mean that you need to spend time that's unproductive with them, or they may not be ready to hear, but you should understand that they're going through their understanding, their seasons of life is not in harmony with yours per se, such that they may be in a stage or a season of their life where they're just in a fallow season. They're just trying to figure out where they are and what just happened, and you may be in a harvest season where you're, you know, reaping the rewards of your hard work and your faith, and you don't understand why this other person's not joyous and happy like you. Well, it's because they're going through a hard time right now, and it's not just a hard time from physical, it's a hard time from spiritual. They're trying to figure it out, and that's where other Christians who have are in a more prosperous season can help feed these people and cultivate people that need that nourishment.
So talk about the Christian that needs to call people out. The Christian that needs to, you know, let's talk for just a second to the men of the audience, the spiritual leaders of their household, okay? And let's say they've got somebody that's in their household that they need to call out. Of course, they want to confront in love. They want to speak the truth in love. But nevertheless, they have to speak the truth. They have to be the rock in the stream. So that if people just want to go around, well, fine, they're going to go around. But you're going to have to stand in righteousness for a particular issue. And you've got to stand in righteousness for that issue, regardless of who says yes or who says no or who says whatever.
Correct.
Righteousness is righteousness.
And I think I don't watch TV at my house. I have a computer and I spend time on the computer, but I don't allow the message from external sources that have ulterior motives to mine. I don't pay for them to put that in my head. I don't need to hear that. I already know what their purpose is, and it's not entertainment. And so it's a devious purpose. So get rid of your TV, right? And the other reason is, why do you want to get rid of your TV? Well, I'll tell you why. Because our founders didn't have TV, and their kids are the ones that took our country from their founding and set it up to what we have today. They're the ones who stood fast, not all of them, but certainly the ones that heard stood fast, that would not allow slavery to continue. Now, if we were watching TV all the time back then, or listening to a radio, or have some other distraction, there would be less emphasis for people to stand for those things. Now, today, we're going through similar issues, not so much as slavery, but certainly, you know, political ideological views, and we can either continue to be deceived and let them continue to do what they want, or we can teach our children how to recognize what's happening and give them the strength, like I was saying earlier, to stay within God's law and Jesus' example in the spirit of righteousness. And that's hard to do for a kid because they want to be accepted and appreciated, and everyone's going to make fun of them and all that kind of stuff. And there are rewards for going along with, you know, the status quo. You don't want to have Obamacare insurance? Well, guess what? You know, you get fined or go to jail, whatever, you know. So there are punishments and there are rewards for going along with it. And that's where you can't compromise on what's right. You just can't do it. It's not our role to determine what's right and what's wrong. And so I think interacting with your kids and recognizing that each one of them have this different pace, they have different desires, they have different wishes, and none of them are what you want to do. And your job isn't to schedule your day to get done what you want to do. Your job is to schedule your day to make sure your kids are being trained properly enough to prepare themselves for when they're an adult. And until that happens, nothing you want to do matters, because your job is to raise your kids.
I'm going to read.
I know that's hard for some people to hear, perhaps, but that's the way I look at it.
Well, let's go on. I'm going to read a scripture here and have you talk a little bit about it. It says in Galatians chapter 6, verse 12, it says, "As many as desire to make a fair show in the flesh, they constrain you to be circumcised, only lest they should suffer persecution for the cross of Christ.
Mm-hmm.
For neither they themselves who are circumcised keep the law, but desire to have you circumcised, that they may glory in your flesh.
Correct.
God forbid that I should glory save in the cross of our Lord Jesus Christ, by whom the world is crucified unto me, and I unto the world." Now let's talk a little bit about the circumcision. The modern circumcision that I would say in society is we've got a lot of gangs with colors, or we've got a lot of people that like tattoos or piercings or other things like this, and they're encouraging other people to join their group or join their fad or join whatever else, and they're asking people basically to be man-pleasers instead of so that they can glory in your appearance, you know? And now speak a little bit about the importance of being a God-pleaser instead of a man-pleaser in today's society.
If Jesus was worried about pleasing men, he wouldn't have been crucified, and we wouldn't be where we are today. So pretty simple. You know, you seek the honor of no man, because men are creations. They're not the gods. You know, God is the one who created us. So whatever, you know, we should seek to please our Creator, God. Men are just interpreting your actions through their filters and their expectations and their desires, and wanting you to stimulate, you know, their needs. And if you are allowed yourself to be drawn away from a righteous path, God's, you know, God's word, in the pursuit of another man's praise, then that's the start of, you know, a pretty serious slide to deception.
All right, and let's take a short break. Listeners, you're You're here on Christ Today, and we're listening to Kevin Bonner speak, and we'll be right back. All right, listeners, welcome back to Christ Today. Today, this section is brought to you by New Life Church in Oroville, and Pastor Malone, who is always glad to see new faces. Thank you. And Kevin Bonner, we're back with you now.
Thank you.
So let's talk a little bit about what you have going today that you hope to leave a legacy, because everybody wants to leave a legacy. They want to leave the world better than they found it. What are some of the activities that you're involved today that does that?
Personally, I'm involved in, like the Marine Corps Aviation Association, like I said. I coach Special Olympics. And, I don't want to make it sound like because I coach Special Olympics or I do have a few voluntary programs that I participate with, that this was just something I always knew to do. I had to learn what it meant to be, in service. And in that service, in that knowledge, I realized just how much is needed out there. And, of course, you don't want to overwhelm yourself with that, so that you can perform well in what you do participate in. But I've been able to involve myself with the Marine Corps Aviation Association, the Special Olympics. I also am a volunteer scuba diver with the California Academy of Sciences in San Francisco, where I am allowed to get inside three of their aquariums and clean the aquariums and interact with the museum attendees and interact with the kids, which is very fun. And I also am on the board of directors with a nonprofit here in the area that's called the Northern California Aerospace Initiative, which is working with the Canthonville Academy in Marysville and some other aeronautically minded individuals in our region and the high schools in the our area to provide aerospace education and professional development for high school kids and our veterans in the area, to provide we will provide scholarships to help support those that are interested in learning how to become a pilot and attaining their pilot certificates, and we will also be working with the Canthonville Academy to start a build a plane vocational construction project at the Canthonville Academy this fall in 2016.
Okay. Now, what kind of legacies are these going to leave?
Well, I hope what I think I've learned as an example of other people from, the past examples is that you spend a portion of your life learning how to be a productive citizen. Then you spend a portion of your life being that productive citizen. But there does come a point in your life when you need to, pass that knowledge on and provide opportunities for other kids, basically, to become that productive citizen. And I think it's important that we all recognize that, as we progress in our life and in our career, that there comes a time when we need to train those that follow. In the Marine Corps, that's easy to see, but in the civilian world, it's not so easy to see. So that's where, your organizations, your associations, your churches, that's where they have opportunities to exercise that type of community involvement and training for our kids. And that's kind of that's really what it's all about. I joined the Marine Corps. People join the military. People join service, and they want to make their world better. They want to make their community better for their kids, to provide opportunities and a good living. And, you know, that's not just people in the United States. It's everywhere. And so we have to assume the responsibility when it's our time to be able to train our kids. And we're doing that at the Camptonville Academy with the Northern California Aerospace Initiative and other people. And it's quite rewarding to watch these kids develop in aviation. But I'll tell you what, and this is where it gets into that production over time, it's no less rewarding watching those Special Olympics athletes go out there and just work hard and compete in their activities to perform to the highest level that they're capable of, too.
How important do you think is things like Sunday school or Bible reading or devotion reading or prayer, a daily walk, a daily, a relationship? Paul said, pray without ceasing, okay? That's not...
Well, it is like a conversation. It's like an ongoing conversation. You know, I use the analogy of scuba diving in my life because I do enjoy scuba diving. And, you know, we can picture ourselves in an environment, in a spiritual environment that surrounds us just as much as the fish in the ocean are surrounded by us, but equally as ignorant of what we're doing, so too are we equally ignorant of what's going on in the spiritual world. And so I think the best thing, the one thing that I do is I try to be aware that I'm in a spiritual world. I'm a physical being in a spiritual world, and I need to recognize that my actions don't go unnoticed, so to speak. And I don't mean to be, you have to be scared of everything that you do, but, you know, it makes an impact. It does matter to the spiritual world what you do. Just like us throwing, you know, trash into the ocean, does matter what happens to the ocean's, you know, inhabitants. Things matter. What we do matters. And so as long we have to understand our role and our connection, not just to the physical world, but to our spiritual world. And that's ongoing. We don't escape it. We can forget about it. A fish doesn't know that it's in water. We don't have to recognize it, but we can't recognize it, but we can comprehend its existence and feel its presence. We know it's there.
Okay. Excellent. In the book of Revelation, a number of times in chapter 2 and in chapter 3, let me go ahead and quote this. Chapter 2, verse 7, he that overcometh. Chapter 11, he that overcometh. To him that overcometh. To him that overcometh. He that overcometh. What are we to overcome here? Are we to overcome our world around us, or are we supposed to be overcoming ourselves?
I think we're supposed to be overcoming our own ignorance. The world around us will never go away. It will always be. They killed Jesus. The world killed the Son of God. So how should we expect to be treated any differently as Christians? You can't expect comfort. It's not designed that way.
Speak to those that are in our listening audience that are equating comfort with, let's say, salvation, sanctification, justification.
Well, I think, you know, without putting a negative connotation on that, you know, I think a lot of it is confidence. Just being confident in what you believe God's word is to you and what his path is for you, and being courageous in that endeavor. You know, in scuba diving, when you're in the middle of the ocean, literally like miles off the ocean, and we'll just say off the coast of California because the visibility, you know, isn't always that great. But, you know, you could go down 100 feet in the middle of the ocean, and all you are is just surrounded in this green fuzzy haze. You don't know which is up and right, which is up and down and left to right or sideways or anything. You don't know if anything's coming after you. You don't know if there's nothing there. You don't know how far out you can see. You know nothing. You're just in this haze. And that's what it's like living, I think, in the faith that what you are doing, what you are performing, is God's desire. You can't know. You just have to purposefully project your righteous path, your desire to perform God's will And it doesn't need to have a side or an up or a down. It just needs for you to do it. And everything else will be taken care of. But it's that confidence. It's that jumping off into the unknown that becomes difficult to do. But that's the only place that you can be.
Okay. So this Missouri show me generation where they can't, Paul says, we walk by faith and not by sight. And everybody, you know, in today's generation seems to want to see what's in it for me. What's the payback? I don't want to, put myself out if I'm not, if there's no kind of return on investment. Everybody's looking out for their own endeavors. Speak to that a little bit about, stepping out and without a guaranteed return.
Well, it is guaranteed. It's just not what you want it to be. That's where it is. That's it right there. That's what you have to realize, is it's not going to be what you think. I mean, I could say that in my own life, and I'm sure other people have the same example. What you planned for your life yesterday is probably not working out today, let alone when you first figured, this is what my life is going to be like when I graduate high school or college or get a new job. It's probably different. And so you have to learn to adjust. Well, it's like that in God's walk as well. It's not your walk. It's God's walk that you're along with, and he wants you to go a certain way and perform certain things. He's asking you to do that. It's not like a negotiation.
And how do we get that closer walk with God? What is it that we want to have as an attitude?
I seek the honor of no man. You seek God's honor only, and in that, you will be honored.
And that means talking with God through Jesus Christ, reading
that
the Word?
That means communicating with God through Jesus Christ and living through Jesus Christ's example on earth.
Mm-hmm. Speak for just a moment, because we don't have very much time left. Speak a little bit about an attitude of gratitude.
Well, I could tell you I think that would be it's difficult sometimes for people in America to experience, because we do have so plentiful comfort. In other countries, it's not like that. And again, it's being aware of different habitats, just like the fish in the sea. A fish in Alaska has no idea what's going on with a fish in Australia. So they have no compassion for that. And if you as a Christian have no knowledge of the sufferings or the needs of others in other places, then you can have no compassion for that. So holing up in your house and watching TV and not understanding what's actually going on in the world is not doing anybody any good. It's just making you comfortable. And just showing up to church on Sunday isn't, part of the solution at all.
There sure is a lot of difficulty in the world. We see it every day on the news. I guess that's the way we can interact with prayer.
Correct. But when you look at the historical context, even in the Old Testament, what makes what's going on today any less difficult to deal with than people, living, 2,000 years ago? They had no air conditioning. They had no cars. If they had an animal to, ride, other than that, it was walking everywhere they went, carrying everything they had.
It's a condition of humankind.
Correct.
Kevin, we just have about a minute left, or maybe less. Would you like to give us a prayer and help us to close this session?
Sure. Dear Lord, I would like for us to be able to concentrate on your will. We can sit here and ask, please give us comforts, and please allow certain events to pass behind us so that we can continue to enjoy the life that we wish to live. But help us concentrate more on the life that you wish us.
Very nice. Thank you very much, Kevin.
Thank you so much.
Yep. Is that it?
Mm-hmm.